Shots, and it's a Tuesday. Glad to have you with us. Patrick Lilia on the other side of the glass. Patrick, how are things over there today with you?
Oh, they're doing good. I'm working on some projects, some really fun and exciting things in the booth today.
Fun and exciting. That's the way we like it here at AM 950. I know exactly what project you're doing in there, and I'll say it's not fun and exciting, but you have to do that every once in a while. Man, so this coronavirus thing, they're quarantining part of New York, and I wonder if this is going to happen in other areas around the country. That's a rather large swath they're doing there in New York, where they're quarantining a number of schools and churches and places of worship for a period of like 14 days. And, well, you wonder if that's going to spread and happen in other places around the country. And what I just think about this is that with the way our society is structured and the way the American economy works, I ultimately don't think quarantines are necessarily going to work. Because we have the type of economy that's built on the fact that you need to go to work to make money. And even if you place someone under quarantine, are they actually going to obey that? At least if it's a self-quarantine. If they need that money to go to their job, they're probably going to do that and spread that disease. So that certainly has me concerned that even when you try to set up these quarantines, I wonder how effective they're going to be when we just have the type of society and economy here in the United States that's based entirely on always going to work.
Well, I had this conversation with Matt yesterday, and I don't know whether this is right or wrong to point this out, but there are a lot of people in the United States who are going to have something like this and say, I'm not going to let it affect my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether they should or should not be a lot more cautious. But like I said, their thought is, I'm not going to let this affect me. And mm-hmm. that might be a bad thing in some circumstances.
Yeah, and that's part of it as well. You definitely will run into a lot of folks that think, well, I'm good about washing my hands or using hand sanitizer. I cover my mouth when I cough. I'm not going to spread this disease, or I'm not at risk for picking up this thing. And yeah, that's certainly something that could lead to the spread of the disease even more. So we'll see how effective the quarantines are. I mean, if you were to run a quarantine by the book, yeah, it probably could end up stopping that virus. But unfortunately, I just don't think many people are ultimately going to obey those orders unless somehow you make it mandatory, and that of course goes down an ugly path where then you need some sort of law enforcement or even the military involved, and that's definitely not going to go over well with people. And again, I just want to point out with the coronavirus, because I hear people saying this, well, it's not that deadly of a disease, it's only a 2 or 3% death rate, and even the people who do end up dying from the disease are usually older, or they already have some sort of pre-existing health condition. And while that certainly is true, that death rate is still much higher than the traditional flu. And then you still have to consider the fact that once you get this thing, I think the recovery time is somewhere from like 2 to 6 weeks, and that's going to put you out of commission. So the more and more this thing spreads around, even if most people do end up recovering, that's still going to lead to you, at least hopefully, not going to work. It's going to have a massive effect overall on society and the economy. So yeah, I get the fact that it's not like some sort of zombie apocalypse type thing, but it certainly is going to continue to have a big effect. And then just another couple of thoughts I got to share about this thing. I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Patrick, but I don't get how a payroll tax cut is going to help with the coronavirus. This is what we've seen the Trump administration propose, and it's a reason, well, a partial reason why the stock market is somewhat rallying today. It's up, last I checked, 700 points, which is significantly higher than it was a couple of hours ago, and it was pretty much just breaking even from yesterday's values. But I'm not picking up how the payroll tax necessarily helps anything. If I'm thinking about it as an everyday person, if I get a little bit more money in my paycheck because of a very modest payroll tax cut, I'm probably just going to use that money to pay bills. I'm not going to spend it on entertainment. I'm not going to spend it going to a concert or a sporting event. I'm not going to use it to go out and eat or to go to a bar, or I'm not going to use it for travel expenses. So I don't overall think it's going to help the economy very much, because what our economy is based on is consumer spending. We are a consumer-driven economy. That's a major reason why the so-called economy is doing this well is that it's being largely driven by consumer spending, and I have a hard time believing that a payroll tax cut is really going to end up helping people. If I get a couple extra bucks in my paycheck, I'm just going to use that to pay down bills. I don't know about you in there. I'm not going to be using it to go travel or for any entertainment purposes.
Yeah, bills are kind of where that's going to be going for me, too.
Yeah, exactly. And even if I had that type of discretionary income, just with the current situation of being advised not to travel and not to shake hands and not to go to large gatherings, you're probably not going to be investing or spending that money in the economy. So, yeah, I have a hard time believing that this payroll tax cut is really going to end up doing a whole lot. While something that could actually end up helping with the coronavirus is something that many congressional Democrats are proposing. And that, of course, is ensuring paid sick leave. And that's something that would help with staving off the economic effects of the coronavirus and then just the health effects and overall personnel well-being is having insured paid sick leave. I don't know how you necessarily do that. It's probably short notice to have mandatory paid sick leave to enact something with Congress on that short a notice. And then you also have to consider that you would need to get that through a Republican-controlled Senate and then signed by the President of the United States. But in a perfect world, that would probably be the best solution, where you could tell folks that, yeah, if you're sick, you can spend a couple weeks at home and still be guaranteed to get a paycheck. That strikes me as being a much more effective response than just saying, well, here's a couple of extra bucks in your paycheck. Because, well, to get that payroll tax cut, you still have to work. So I would think that solution certainly makes a lot more sense than just giving someone a tax cut. But as we typically see with Republicans, well, a tax cut is pretty much the solution to everything. We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So what's on tap for the show today? Coming up in segment two, we're going to take a little bit of a deeper dive at this bill I mentioned yesterday that has to do with trying to get rid of these annoying robocalls and call spoofing that you get from telemarketers and robocallers and so on and so on. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be chatting with Representative Zach Stevenson, who serves in the Minnesota Legislature in the House of Representatives. His district currently is part of, I think, Coon Rapids and Champlain Park. We'll be talking with him as he's one of the authors of this bill. And the thing that I like that he's authoring is that it tries to combat this idea of call spoofing, because that's really what ends up leading to this big increase of these robocalls, is the ability for scammers to put in fake phone numbers on their caller ID. So we'll be talking with Zach Stevenson coming up in just a few minutes. Then want to preview something we're going to be talking about on Thursday's show, and it has to do with presidential politics. We're going to be speaking with our friend David Schultz over at Hamline University about building coalitions and trying to win a general election. Both David and I share some concerns about both Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden trying to build coalitions to win in November. At least in the Bernie Sanders camp, there's really not much of a coalition being built beyond just his core base of supporters. While then, if you look at the Joe Biden coalition that he's trying to build, unfortunately, it looks very similar to the coalition that Hillary Clinton built in 2016, which was based on moderate suburban voters and not really doing much outreach towards younger and more liberal voters. And I think it's very problematic. So that'll be a conversation we'll have with Professor David Schultz of Hamline University on Thursday. But as a little preview of that, I do want to talk about a couple of news stories about why I think this is kind of a big deal, the fact that you need to build coalitions to win in November. It's this idea that you can't just rely on having moderate Republicans being part of your Democratic coalition. It usually doesn't work. I mean, think of this example right here. So we have this guy who is the mayor of a Michigan town. Let's find his name here. Michael Taylor. He's the mayor of Sterling Heights, Michigan, which is a fairly large-sized city over in Michigan. He's a Republican, and he's announced that he is abandoning the deranged President Trump and throwing his support behind Joe Biden. Looks great on the surface. Yeah, you're getting a Republican mayor of a mid-sized town announcing that, yes, he will vote for Joe Biden in the general election should Joe Biden be the Democratic nominee. But here's where that coalition can be a little bit flimsy. Let's say Joe Biden does get into the White House and he wins the general election in November. Are you going to continue to have the support of someone like a Michael Taylor, again, this Republican mayor from Sterling Heights, or even other moderate Republicans who may vote for a Joe Biden in the general election? Chances are, probably not, because at the end of the day, yeah, they're Republicans. And let's even look at this from a Democratic perspective. We have some new polling data released from Gallup today, which shows that Mitt Romney, Utah senator, among Americans around the entire country, has a higher approval rating from Democrats than Republicans. Just released today, Mitt Romney has a 56% approval rating from Democrats, a 23% approval rating from Republicans. So you would think, yeah, if Mitt Romney were to run for president again in some sort of alternate dimension, or maybe as soon as 2024, on the surface you would say, boy, he would be a great candidate. Look at all that support he gets from Democrats. But as many of our AM 950 listeners are, they lean Democrat and are pretty progressive. Is there any chance you would vote for Mitt Romney in a general election matchup? In my case, that would be no chance whatsoever. So while on the surface, yeah, you would look at those Mitt Romney approval ratings among Democrats and say, boy, in essence, on the surface, he would look like a strong candidate in a general election. But sit there and think, as a Democratic voter or someone who leans progressive, there's probably no chance you would ever vote for Joe Biden in a general, or not Joe Biden, Mitt Romney in a general election. And I think that's true of Republicans when they go out there and say, yeah, I would support Joe Biden. That might be true just for one election when they would vote against Donald Trump. But that support is not going to last. So we'll talk more about this on Thursday with Professor David Schultz of Hamline University, the importance of building coalitions, as we'll address this from both the Bernie Sanders camp and also the Joe Biden camp, and the concerns we have with both candidates in terms of trying to build coalitions that can win in November and beyond. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up next, we're going to switch gears and talk about this bill going through the state legislature that will hopefully cut down on all the robocalls you might be getting every day. That'll be my conversation with Zach Stevenson, representative from 36A in the North Metro, next on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
If you're looking to save money on your home or building improvement project, check out Better Futures Minnesota's reuse retail warehouse in South Minneapolis. We carry salvaged building materials such as cabinetry, flooring, plumbing fixtures, appliances, lighting, and more, saving you money and saving the planet by keeping these items out of the landfill, by giving them another life. Selections change daily, and we also take donations. Go to betterfuturesminnesota.com and look under Reuse Warehouse to learn more. Let us know AM 950 sent you.
Moe's Tax Service on Ford Parkway in St. Paul has been preparing tax returns since 1971. They're one of the most successful independently owned tax services in the country, with a diverse team of highly trained and screened tax preparation experts. Tax laws and forms are always changing, and you need someone who is a dedicated tax preparation professional. Visit www.moestax.com. That's MOHS tax.com, or give them a call, 612-721-2026. Moe's Tax Service. They work for you, not the IRS.
Hello? Is anybody here? You there. I'm George Washington, here for the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Where is everyone?
It was moved, sir. Ben Franklin blasted out an event on Facebook and invited everyone to Independence Hall. Didn't you get it?
I'm Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. If your marketing is behind the times, contact us online at socialmediamn.com or at 763-244-4058. We can help your business message get blasted out on social media and Google search. We offer uncomplicated, results-driven, and affordable internet marketing solutions for businesses of all sizes. SocialMediaMN.com or 763-244-4058.
There are so many times in life when it's important to have a plan. I'm attorney Rachel Schroman, and I can tell you from experience that so much pain can be prevented with an estate plan or an arrangement for long-term care costs. I work with families with many different dynamics and budgets, and my goal is always to give them peace of mind while helping them protect their legacy. Learn more about me at schromanlaw.com. That's schromenlaw.com.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake would like to say Pinigigi for all your support these last 3 years. We discuss national and local Native news and events. Weekly correspondents bring us updates and information from all over Turtle Island.
Native Roots Radio I'm Awake is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Saturdays live 1 to 3. Free Leonard Peltier.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Well, right now I want to talk about a bill that is going to be introduced at the state legislature, and it's something we can all agree on that probably needs to be enacted. Legislation to combat robocalls and call spoofing. I get these things all the time, and I'm sure you probably do as well. So joining us to talk about House File 3099, which deals with legislation on robocallers and call spoofers, is Representative Zach Stevenson. He represents District 36A, which is part of the Coon Rapids area in the metro area, as he joins us now on the program. Hey, Representative Stevenson, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
So, got to ask you, what inspired you to introduce this legislation? Because I'm sure everyone has a story about these annoying robocallers. But what specifically made you think, all right, we need to introduce some legislation to combat this stuff?
Well, I heard a lot about from my constituents in Champlain and Coon Rapids about how they're tired of these calls interrupting their lives. But on top of that, I think the statistics that we're experiencing right now are really compelling. So in 2019, Minnesotans experienced over 500 million robocalls. That's over 125 calls per adult living in Minnesota. And on top of that, you know, these calls aren't just a nuisance. They're a real fraud creator. You know, there are tons of vulnerable adults and senior citizens that are taken advantage of by fraudulent robocallers every single day across Minnesota.
And I can even think back to some of those stories. One of our other hosts was talking about, I think this is out of San Francisco, where an Uber driver was going to take an older woman to a bank because she thought she owed some money to the IRS. Unfortunately, this driver intervened and started questioning her, and then they ended up calling that phone number and turned out to be fraudulent. So, yeah, even though in most cases you think, all right, I can obviously determine what's going to be a spam call and what's not, well, there is a population that is very vulnerable to this, and a lot of those are senior citizens.
Well, and these calls can be very intimidating, even for people who aren't who are pretty savvy. I'll tell you a story. I'm a prosecutor for Hennepin County. That's my day job when the legislature's not in session. And I was talking about this bill with a Hennepin County judge, a sitting Hennepin County judge, who said to me, you know, I'm a judge, but I got one of these calls that the caller purported to be the IRS and said if I didn't pay these taxes that they were going to issue an arrest warrant. And the judge said, you know, I sign arrest warrants. I know what goes into that. I knew that was a fraudulent call, but it was still intimidating to me to hear someone on the other end of the call saying, an arrest warrant is going to go out for you if you don't give me your money. And so even for someone who's got that level of sophistication and that level of experience with the criminal justice system, to be intimidated, imagine what the average person feels when they hear that message on the phone.
Absolutely. So let's talk about House File 3099. Just in a nutshell, we'll go through more details of the bill, but as an overall summary, what exactly does this do?
So this bill would be the nation's toughest ban on robocalls, and it really tries to get at the thing that has made the calls particularly effective, which is the spoofing. So spoofing is where the phone number that appears on your caller ID appears to be local, but the call is actually coming from somewhere far away. And it's this technology that allows it to look like maybe one of your neighbors is calling you, so you pick up the phone, or maybe it looks like it's coming from the IRS or Xcel Energy or someone else that you would want to talk to, and in fact the call is coming from, you know, like the Ukraine. The good news is that there is technology in existence today that allows your telecommunications company to recognize the discrepancy between where the call is actually coming from and where it shows it's coming from on your caller ID and interrupt the call before your phone even rings. Or to label it fraud risk or spam alert on your caller ID. And that technology is available right now. Some telecommunications companies have rolled it out free of charge to their consumers. Some telecommunications companies are charging an additional $3 a month for it, and some telecommunications companies are not making it available at all. Everyone should have access to this technology, and they shouldn't have to pay extra for it. Can you imagine if your bank said, we'll protect you from fraudulent debit card transactions, but only if you pay an extra $3 a month? That'd be ludicrous. The same thing applies here. We shouldn't pay extra to be protected from fraud. So the core, sort of beating heart of this bill is the requirement that all of the telecommunications companies in Minnesota implement the latest and greatest anti-robocall technology free of charge to the consumer.
Yeah, I'm on Verizon myself, and I occasionally get these now. It seems like it's been rolled out fairly recently, where occasionally, yeah, on the caller ID, it'll say spam call suspected or something like that. But I still do get lots of those spoof numbers still that end up calling me. And the technology to do so is very easy. I was reading through how some guy, I think he was a reporter for, blanking on the name of the newspaper, he paid $10, and yeah, essentially he could enter anything he wanted as his caller ID. So overall, yeah. are these telecommunication companies doing enough? I mean, with Verizon, as I'm talking about, they sometimes catch some of these things, but as a whole, are they doing enough to combat trying to block these spam calls?
Not as a whole, and you know, you don't want to paint an entire industry with one brush. There are some telecommunications companies that are being active and aggressive in combating these calls, others that aren't. And you know, when I talk to a lot of these companies, because they've all come to visit me since I put out this bill, you can imagine, they all purport to say that they want to protect their consumers from fraud, they want to protect their consumers from robocalls. So this is their opportunity. I tell them, you know, support this bill and let's get it done.
And another part of the bill does deal with the scammers themselves, where I believe there
That's
are
right.
some fines that could be placed on them too. So talk about that aspect.
So what the bill does is it includes some criminal enhancements. If an identity theft or a theft by swindle is accomplished by way of a robocall or spoof call, then we have some criminal enhancements that will allow, because, you know, the thing is, it can be very difficult in cases of identity theft to put together a case. As I mentioned, I'm a prosecutor. I have experience doing this. Very often we know that someone has engaged in a long string of criminal behavior around identity theft, but we only can prove up, you know, one specific action of it because of how sophisticated the scheme is. And so dialing up some of the criminal enhancements and giving our law enforcement some additional tools to address this problem will allow us to more effectively prosecute the fraudsters when we actually have the opportunity. Unfortunately, you know, a large number of people who are engaged in this behavior are overseas, and we just aren't ever going to be able to prosecute people living in the Ukraine for spoofing calls in Minnesota. And that's why it's so important to focus on interrupting the call before it gets to your phone, right? So that's why the onus needs to be on the telecommunications company. But if we are able to catch someone spoofing here in Minnesota, which does happen, then we got to make sure our law enforcement has the tools necessary to hold those people accountable.
So what's the response been that you've gotten from the telecommunications companies on this bill?
Well, again, you know, I don't want to speak with too much of a broad brush. Some of them have come to the table, and we've talked, and we've been working on it. In fact, we've made some adjustments to the bill to address some of the concerns that they had about the original language. You know, I'm happy to talk to anyone or work with anyone to fight robocalls because it's just a problem that is so pernicious and affects so many people. Other people have just said, this is not an issue we think the state should deal with. We think the feds should deal with it, which to me is just passing the buck, okay? You know, this problem is affecting Minnesotans every day. 500 million robocalls in 2019, 125 plus calls per adult. We need an all-hands-on-deck approach. State, federal, whatever level of government can handle it should be handling it. So I just kind of reject that approach, that comment out of hand.
What have other states been doing on this in terms of legislation to try to combat robocalls? I know you said we would have the toughest penalties in the country. Have you looked at what other states have done and tried to model off what they've done and maybe expand? Talk about that part a little bit.
Right, exactly. So the bill is the toughest bill in the country, but it's toughest because of its scope as well as its sort of depth. In other words, you know, some states have looked at criminal penalties. Some states have looked at some civil actions. Some states have looked at that regulatory approach or that consumer protection approach that we're taking in the bill. But no one has done all of that, and no one has done it to the degree to which we're going to try and do it here in Minnesota. So we're kind of taking an everything in the kitchen sink approach to try and solve this problem because it is just impacting so many people's lives.
So you have a hearing on this bill that is scheduled, I believe, for this afternoon from 2:30 until 4:30, as you'll have former Attorney General Skip Humphrey testifying on behalf of the AARP. What can people expect if they hear about this in the news or even if they head to the Capitol themselves with the hearing today?
Well, I think we're going to have a robust discussion about the bill. As you mentioned, the AARP has been very supportive, and they will be there. Legal Aid is also supporting it. The Attorney General's office is also supporting it. So we have a lot of people coming out to say that they're in support of this bill. I think you'll probably also hear some concerns from the telecommunications companies, and you'll probably hear a debate about whether or not we should move forward with the bill. But in the end, I think we have the votes. I think the bill will move forward. And I think this is an area where the public wants us to take action, and they don't care if it's Democrats or Republicans moving the ball forward. They just want to see some results.
Yeah, I was going to say as the final question, I mean, this has to have some pretty bipartisan support. This doesn't really strike me as being a Republican or a DFL issue.
When I hear from constituents, it doesn't really matter if they're Republicans or Democrats. They want something to happen. I guess we're going to find out this afternoon if it's a bipartisan issue here at the Capitol.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see if anyone does come out and speak against that. As you said, maybe someone from the industry, but it'll be interesting to hear what the concerns. So, yeah, I have to check up what happens with that hearing today, again, taking place from 2:30 until 4:30. We've been speaking with Representative Zach Stevenson from District 36A, which represents portions of the North Metro, including Coon Rapids, about this bill to combat robocalls and call spoofing. It's House File 3099. Hey, Zach, thanks so much for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me. I come back anytime.
Coming up next, we'll have more news from the state legislature on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for March the 10th, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. President Trump says he'll be meeting with Senate and House Republicans today to discuss a possible tax relief measure to provide a timely and effective response to the coronavirus. That from CNBC. At a briefing, Trump said we are to be meeting with House Republicans Mitch McConnell and discussing a possible payroll tax cut or relief, substantial relief. CNBC notes those potential tax incentives come on top of an $8.3 billion spending package Trump signed last month. New research from the Economic Policy Institute shows that switching to a single-payer health system would boost the overall economy, make it easier for workers to switch jobs or start businesses, and create a net surplus of new jobs.
Josh Bivens with the Institute says wages would likely go up under Medicare for All because owners could elect to give some of the money that would have otherwise gone to insurance companies to workers instead.
And so you've got about $700 billion today that is employee compensation that comes in the form of employers paying for health insurance premiums. You take that off their back, it's the potential for employers to instead pay higher wages.
Besides contending that Medicare for All would mean higher taxes, some critics recently have sounded the alarm about potential job loss, pointing to research projecting that 1.8 million insurance-related administrative and bill processing jobs would disappear once private health insurance is no longer needed. I'm Eric Galatis.
The report projects switching to a single-payer system would create demand for 2.3 million full-time health care workers. This is PNS.
Minnesota health officials say they're working to contain the spread of coronavirus after the state announced its first case last week. But one local health care consultant says neighborhoods need to band together as well. Dan Billings, chief innovation officer at Pathway Health, says in the part of Duluth where he lives, he's trying to organize with his neighbors to determine who has experience to help each other should the hospital systems become overwhelmed.
The there's less chaos in the community, the neighborhood, there's going to be less chaos for my own home.
Billing says it isn't only about caring for neighbors who would become infected, but also assisting anyone who might break a leg or have another health issue that would be secondary in a pandemic. His plan has received the vocal support from St. Louis County health officials. Like public health officials, Billing says being prepared isn't about raising any fear or panic. He says it's about making sure residents who live around you have someone they can rely on in a worst-case situation.
The majority will have to recover in their home once we get to that point where the health system has all their beds filled.
Meanwhile, the state says the person infected with coronavirus had minimal contact with others before seeking medical treatment. The health department has set up a hotline for anyone who has questions about the virus. That number is 651-201-3920. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection.
And after hearing oral arguments last week, the U.S. Supreme Court considers whether a Louisiana law requiring doctors who perform abortions to have admitting privileges at a local hospital can stand. Elsie Hogue with NARAL Pro-Choice says the court's current makeup is a major factor.
This is the first abortion case that the court will hear with Brett Kavanaugh sitting. And I think we're going to see whether he not only respects women and our individual decision making and our health, but also whether he respects precedent.
I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Located just south of downtown Minneapolis, the Blaisdell is the perfect venue for your next event. The Blaisdell is a fresh, modern, newly remodeled historic mansion with spaces that can accommodate groups of 25 to 700. While perfect for weddings, the Blaisdell also includes rooms with high-tech audio and video equipment for your company's next gathering. So whether it's a dream wedding or impressing colleagues and clients, choose the Blaisdell as your next event venue. Select dates are still available. More at theblaisdell.com.
This is Chad, owner of AM950. Our station has worked with Barbara from WYSIWYG Web Design for years on everything from logo to print design and especially for developing our website. She does great work and is great to work with, listening to what our goals and design ideas were while offering new, innovative ideas to create the website we are proud of today. Barbara made sure she understood our station, our goals, and our mission before she started working on our site and made suggestions to help control the cost. Plus, she's friendly, which set us at ease. I recommend Barbara at WYSIWYG Web Design because I know she will deliver an attractive, professional website within the budget you have. She is a local independent business that specializes in helping other local businesses achieve their website and design goals. She can work with nearly any budget and create anything from simple sites to robust custom functionality. To find out more about the company AM950 Trust, go to WYSIWYGWebDesign.com. Spelled out just like it sounds, WYSIWYGWebDesign.com.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly sunny skies today with a high near 40. Tonight, some light rain and snow with a low around 28. Wednesday, cloudy with a high near 50. And Thursday, partly cloudy with a high around 46. Filled with vintage Midwestern touches, Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club offers dinners, cocktails, and concerts, offering mouth-watering views of picturesque Moor Lake. Besides their great music, they also have a dining-only option in the fireside dining room. Crooner's Lounge and Supper Club is located off Moor Lake and Highway 65. Details at croonersloungemn.com.
If I didn't know any better, Patrick, I would say you're a fan, maybe a closet fan, of The Apprentice back in the early 2000s. Ah, the old Apprentice theme song, Money, 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 and I'm sure, man, this is a quiz right here. Maybe you know the answer. Who did that song? Do you know what band that was?
I actually do not know.
I wonder how they feel about that song now being affiliated with Donald Trump, because you can't listen to that song and not think about Trump. So there you go. A little bit of a side note there. Well, we have some rather concerning news to report, just breaking. We have a third person identified in Minnesota that has the COVID-19 coronavirus. And this one's much more concerning than the previous two cases that we had reported. This is a guy who already is in critical condition. He's from Anoka County, and he's only in his 30s. The Star Tribune is reporting that it's a guy between the ages of 30 and 39. He is from Anoka County. He has the coronavirus, and he's in critical condition. So, yikes, that is some... not very good news, because oftentimes we hear that, oh yeah, this only affects older people or those who have pre-existing health conditions. Now, who knows? Maybe this guy does have a pre-existing health condition, but yeah, just being in his 30s, which, by the way, that's where I am. I'm only 34 years old, does kind of hit home. And no other details have really been released about it yet. We don't even know what town it is in Anoka County that he's from. But yeah, he is in critical condition. Hopefully this guy recovers, but wonder now if that's going to lead to some quarantines here in Minnesota. So yeah, it's kind of sobering news there, Patrick. I know you had a plan to actually take a trip to Japan a little bit later this month, and you've put those on hold because of, well, all the travel restrictions we've been seeing from the airlines, among other reasons.
Well, first thing I would say, we've got an unrelated call from David the Trucker. He wanted to let us know that song is by the OJs, which is...
The OJs, okay.
Actually,
gotcha.
That was what I thought, so I was right. I just didn't want to say it in case I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I was thinking about it, especially over the last couple of weeks. I think in my mind I had decided I wasn't going to go on this trip anymore because I was thinking more about, I'm going to wake up this morning and Delta's going to have canceled my flight, or Japan is not going to be letting people in, or the U.S. isn't going to be letting people in from affected areas. And it just kind of got to the point where I was thinking more about, why should I get ready for a trip that somebody is going to decide I can't take anymore?
And the worst case scenario I think you could run into is that, yeah, let's say you do go to Japan and then all of a sudden this thing gets really bad and they shut down all the airlines. You might be unfortunately stuck in Japan for a while, and while I'm sure it's a great place to visit, that's a lot of money out of your pocket trying to find a hotel or somewhere else to stay at. And that very well could be a realistic scenario that we see where you might have all airlines shutting down their international travel, which could leave you out of luck if you were end up going to Japan. And I'm sure you probably had friends and family members in your ear telling you, Patrick, don't take this trip to Japan.
I did have a couple, yes. And actually, my mom, she didn't tell me to cancel, but when I told her last night I wasn't going to go anymore, she didn't hold back, that she was happy I made that choice.
Yeah, she's being the supportive mother. You know, you always want to support what your children do, but in the back of their mind, you're always very concerned about the decision. So, yeah, I'm sure she was definitely relieved. And, yeah, wow, this thing is certainly not going away anytime soon, and that's certainly this case up there in Anoka County, this guy who's in his 30s who has the coronavirus and is in critical condition at the hospital. Wow. Well, interesting to see if he has any pre-existing conditions. If he doesn't, that certainly makes this a much more potent case if he does not have any underlying health conditions. Let's see if we have any more information about it. Let's say they're reporting that the patient felt sick back on February 28th and then sought health care and testing for the COVID-19 virus on Monday. That would be yesterday. Minnesota's public health lab confirmed the positive test today, though the finding is presumptive until confirmed by the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. And looking through on Twitter, I mean, Twitter not exactly the most verifiable news source, a lot of folks are saying as well that he was experiencing some international travel earlier and he might have interacted with some passengers who were international travelers, so that could be the reason why he ended up with the virus. But I'm sure now if this thing, well, presumably they're saying it's positive unless somehow it was a false positive, but I'm guessing they're probably going to be going through everyone the guy has contacted, and it would certainly be nice if they would actually say what town this guy is from, so maybe people who live in that area could take some precautions. But yeah, I'm not the person in charge of that, but we do have that third case in Minnesota. Again, a guy in his 30s in critical condition. Also want to talk about this with the coronavirus a little bit on a lighter note. So I've been seeing this float there on social media. You hear this all the time. The Simpsons predicted it. The Simpsons predicted it. Well, as you can probably guess, someone went through on social media and put together a bunch of images from a Simpsons episode back in 1993 saying that they predicted the coronavirus. The viral collection of images believed to be taken from a 1993 episode show multiple characters spreading and catching an ominous cloud of germs. In one snapshot, a newscaster delivers a report on a coronavirus, as indicated by a slide over the shoulder of the anchor. Wouldn't that be Kent Brockman? Is he the anchor from The Simpsons?
I believe so, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Although I think I might, now that you mention this, I may have seen this and that was shopped.
Yeah, that's what I was reading through, too, or it sounds like these images were taken from multiple episodes. And even if they were taken from one episode, keep in mind the coronavirus is not a new thing. The COVID-19 is the real name of the virus. It's a strain of the coronavirus. We've always had the coronavirus for decades and decades. It's just, I think as I've seen it talked about, it's just a form of the flu. And this COVID-19, or novel COVID-19, is a new strain that was just developed. So just by saying that, oh yeah, the Simpsons were reporting on a coronavirus, is not really predicting the future, since the coronavirus has been around for years and years and decades and decades. But of course, that doesn't stop people from saying, oh, the Simpsons predicted it. The Simpsons predicted Trump, and so on and so on and so on. Also staying a little bit on the lighter side of the news with the coronavirus. Have you seen any of these virus movies that have really reemerged since the coronavirus has taken hold? I know Contagion is the big one, which I know I'm part of that crowd that ended up watching that a few nights ago. If you're not familiar, Contagion is a movie from 2011, and at least it has a special connection to Minnesota. It wasn't shot here, but one of the main characters, who I think was played by Kate Winslet, she was an international traveler who's trying to get back to her home in Minnesota. She ends up contracting this virus and dies a few days later. Matt Damon is her husband, who is from Minnesota in this movie. He's also a part of the plot, but they do go through a realistic case of terms of how the government would respond to a virus. So that's one of the movies that a lot of people are seeing reemerge. Another one, this is an awful movie. I wouldn't recommend watching it. I was talking with you when I was having that pre-recorded interview from the last segment, Outbreak. Do you remember that one from 1995, Patrick?
I don't think I've seen that one. I think I saw a movie. It was called Pandemic. I don't remember. The only scene I remember, because I was just a kid, was somebody at a movie theater, like, there were a bunch of people at movie theaters, and they're laughing, and they zoom in on the droplets floating into somebody's mouth or something like that.
I think that actually is Outbreak. It started by, it was a monkey in Africa who ends up contracting some virus, and the monkey gets smuggled into a California pet store. It bites the pet store owner, who ends up going to a movie theater and coughing on people. Under that scene that I think you're describing right there, where they show all those droplets landing on people and then causing them to get a virus. Then the town ends up getting quarantined, and it turns out the government knew about the virus the entire time and wanted to use it as a biological weapon to fend off enemies. So what they want to do is bomb the entire town to prevent it from spreading, and then also still be able to have that virus available as a weapon. It's not a good movie, by the way. I'm by no means recommending it, but it does have some big names, including Donald Sutherland is the bad guy. It's also got Cuba Gooding Jr. Kevin Spacey, at least, is kind of a highlight. You get to see him go through a pretty gruesome scene where he's bleeding from all over his head. So, yeah, that's certainly not one of the movies I would recommend watching, but it is something that has reemerged. Forgot about this one, too, I Am Legend. Do you remember that one from, like, a decade ago? That's sort of related to, like, a viral outbreak where Will Smith is one of the last survivors after a supposed cure for cancer ends up mutating and killing just about everyone on the planet. Do you remember that one at all, Patrick?
I remember the name of the movie and that Will Smith was in it. I did not see it.
Yeah, so that's another movie that's seen an increase in popularity. So maybe a few of these movie studios are at least seeing a little money come into them, among a lot of other industries that are being hit hard by the coronavirus. Hey, also want to point out, we did get an email from Ted who wanted to talk about the tax cuts that are being proposed by the Trump administration. And he said, these tax cuts are not meant to help people, but to deplete the Social Security Trust Fund. Never let a good crisis go unexploited. And I think Ted might be onto something right there, whereby, yeah, having that payroll tax cut that's being proposed by the administration, they can at least say, oh, yeah, we're doing something by putting more money in people's pockets, even though, as I talked about earlier in the show, that money is probably just going to go towards paying bills and not really going to be invested into the economy at whole. And as he talked about, yeah, by having that payroll tax cut, that means, well, you're going to be further depleting the Social Security tax the Social Security Trust Fund, rather, which means, oh yeah, in a few years we can say, oh, we have another Social Security crisis, we need to privatize it to make sure Social Security is sustainable. So, Ted, thanks for the email over at comment@am950radio.com. I think you might be onto something there, saying that never let a good crisis go unexploited. And taking things to some news from the state legislature, Kevin Featherly, friend of the show, has been sitting in at this meeting of one of the Senate committees that has to do with, well, debating gun bills. And this committee that's meeting today about a number of gun bills, including seven that are being sponsored by Republicans in the Republican-controlled Senate, Ron Latz, who's a DFLer, has taken an interesting track to try to get red flag legislation through. What he's done is that he's put his red flag protection order legislation as an amendment to Senator Eric Pratt's Senate File 2101, which is a GOP-authored bill that is meant to enforce judicial orders when guns are court-ordered to be removed under existing law, a.k.a. strengthening laws that are already on the books, which is something we often hear from Republicans when it comes to debating gun reform and gun safety. But I like this track that Ron Latz has taken by trying to put this red flag legislation as an amendment to Eric Pratt's bill. And, of course, Republicans not happy about this, as the Judiciary Chair Warren Limmer, a Republican from Maple Grove, says he wants common sense solutions, falling between the extreme positions of red flag bills and background checks. How are those extreme bills? At least that's according to Limmer, on the DFL side, and stand your ground bills on the Republican side. So you notice what Warren Limmer is doing right there. He's trying to portray stand your ground as an extreme on the Republican side, and then the red flag laws and the background checks as an extreme on the other side. I'm not sure this will be an effective strategy since, well, in essence, red flag laws and background checks are by no means extreme, but it is straight out of the Republican playbook where you take a Democratic original proposal and say that's the extreme. And it is something that Democrats often struggle with when they try to put forth legislation. Democrats already kind of start from a compromise position while Republicans start with their more extreme position, allowing Republicans to say, all right, we'll compromise, even though their so-called compromised solution is a little bit leaning more towards the right. Although I'm not sure this will work here in the case of gun safety reform, since Democrats are pretty much universally on board, at least here in Minnesota, for having these red flag bills and background checks. But Limmer, at least trying to go through that political posturing of saying that he's looking for a common sense solution between strengthening laws that are already on the books versus the red flag laws from Democrats. And no surprise Warren Limmer is doing that, since he is currently the senator of a district that had one of the House seats flipped to Democratic back in 2018. So he is certainly one of the more vulnerable Republicans coming up this fall. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Come back with a few more miscellaneous stories as you're listening to FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Hello. If your taxes from years past are talking to you from the back of that drawer in your desk, it might be about time you answered the call by making a call to Moe's Tax Service in St. Paul.
Time to come out now.
They've been preparing tax returns and creating advisory-based relationships with their clients since 1971.
Kind of stuffy in here.
Problems with the IRS don't go away by ignoring them. Call Moe's Tax Service. That's M-O-H-S. They're on Ford Parkway in St. Paul. 612-721-2026. 721-2026.
Vacuum cleaners. You buy them, you break them, and then you throw them away, right? Well, if you're ready to break out of that vicious cycle, we have the answer. Never heard of A1 Vacuum? They've been around forever, offering better alternatives. So if you're ready to stop filling the landfill, give A1 Vacuum a shot. Located in Roseville and ready to show you something better. Find them at a-1vacuum.com or call 651-222-6316. Better yet, drop by.
Hi, I'm Peter Solak.
And I'm Adam Ostrowski.
We are here at Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces to talk about the joy of live fire cooking. Cooking over a live fire is the oldest and most basic form of cooking.
What's new is in the way fire is handled and its heat is managed.
It's easier to experience and enjoy the smell and taste of food cooked over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces sells and installs live fire grills, fire pits, and ovens. Let us help you experience the smell, the taste, the fun of cooking with fire.
Pizza was first made and is still best made in an open fire oven. The radiant and conductive heat of a live fire is unmatched for wood roasting and baking artisan breads, too.
Come see the many ways you can cook over a live fire.
Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces has over 35 working wood and gas units on display at the corner of East Franklin and Riverside Avenue in Minneapolis. More information at woodlandstoves.com. Find the fire that works for you. Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces, out of the ordinary products and services since 1977.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. I'm an idealist working to change the world. My show, Ellie 2.0 Radio, highlights other past and present idealists and the incredible things humans can do when we work for the greater good. You remember that idea about the greater good, right? I've got a vision of a better world where everyone has a place at the table. Listen every Monday from 7 to 8 a.m. and be inspired on AM 950.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake would like to say Pini Gigi for all your support these last 3 years. We discuss national and local Native news and events. Weekly correspondents bring us updates and information from all over Turtle Island.
Native Roots Radio I'm Awake is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Saturdays live 1 to 3. Free Leonard Peltier.
And by the way, do make sure you check out Robert Pilot's Wednesday afternoon show, Wednesdays from 5 till 6, Pilot's Progressive Party. He's also a part of that St. Paul teacher's strike, so he certainly has a unique perspective to share on that.
We're actually expecting to hear from him on the Matt McNeil show coming up next.
Oh, good. Hopefully we'll get an update on, yeah, what's happening over there with the St. Paul teachers and their strike that they currently have going on. No other updates on this guy who just got the coronavirus, or didn't just get the coronavirus. It's just being reported that he tested positive for it and is now in critical condition. A guy in his 30s, which again, certainly very concerning since he's not an older gentleman. And we'll have to find out if he has some sort of a pre-existing health condition. He's from Anoka County, by the way. No other plans of other events being canceled in Minnesota, though, including the NCAA Wrestling Championships, which are set to take place in not too long, March 19th through 21st. They're at U.S. Bank Stadium. NCAA had hoped to set a record crowd of 45,000, but not sure they're going to be reaching that if the coronavirus continues to spread. One more story to talk about before we go today. Voter suppression can affect anybody, including the mayor of Kansas City, who was turned away from his own polling place that he's lived at for 11 years. Turned away, and he's the mayor of the city itself. Absolutely crazy how voter suppression works. All right, we got Matt McNeil coming up in just a few minutes. And I hope my bottle of, the bottle I have in my office of hand sanitizer is still there. It's the large bottle I got a few days ago, and Matt McNeil's been eyeing that, so we'll have to see if that's still there. All right, I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
They really appreciate what she's done as a sister as well as a soldier and, you know, supporting their country.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join.
Family members that are soldiers in the Army National Guard inspire and influence, setting a path for others.
It's validating knowing that, you know, I kind of did my part to make sure this is what they actually wanted and that they feel the same way I do. I'm really proud that we get to help shape the future, and I know that my sisters are going to be amazing soldiers.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share in.
A lot of pride, and they're just out there doing something every day and then serving their country as well.